The idea of a message sealed in a bottle and sent off to unknown land sounds like something that only happens in stories or songs. But Chad Pograki has a whole collection of messages in bottles. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with Chad Pograki about his Message in a Bottle collection, now on display at the Figge Museum in Davenport. And we'll talk about his work with Living Lands and Waters, cleaning up more than 9 million pounds of trash from U.S. waterways over the last 20 years. Later in the hour, Project AWARE, a river cleanup project sponsored by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, marks its 15th year this summer. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The idea of writing a letter, sealing it in a bottle, and tossing it into a river to send it into the great unknown is pretty romantic. Many people have sent these messages, never knowing if they'd be retrieved. Then along comes Chad Pograki. He pulls stuff out of waterways all the time. He's the founder of Living Lands and Waters, which is based in Moline, Illinois, an organization he founded nearly 20 years ago. And for 20 years, he's been pulling trash out of rivers, starting with the Mississippi. And he is here with me now. Hello, Chad.
How's it going?
Great. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
No, it's my honor and my pleasure. So.
And we're going to talk about some of the work you're doing, some of the work you're hoping to do and you're engaged in right now. But I do want to start with this message in a bottle collection that's going to be on display or is on display right now at the Figge Museum. 40 different bottles that contain messages. Now, how rare is it for you to find a bottle with a message inside when you're out cleaning up a waterway?
It's pretty rare. It's pretty exciting as well. They're really fun to find. And I'm always scanning all the trash to find them and the shorelines and things. So, it is pretty rare, but it's pretty cool. And so, yeah.
Do you remember when you found your first one?
I found one down by Sunset Marina in the Quad Cities across from Davenport from a school, I think was my first one. And maybe the second one was some arsenal workers at the Rock Island Arsenal. In 1993, we're sandbagging. This is what the message said, and it has a flag on it, just a cool message. That one's still on. That's on display as well. But I think the one that got me to think, hey, I really need to be saving these. These are really cool. 18-year-old girl threw a message off on a family vacation. And she was an artist, and she painted this little picture on the back of this message. And on the front side, it said, "I'm 18 years old. I'm on a family vacation, and I'm an artist. And I'm gonna, when I'm done with this vacation, I'm gonna move to LA, and I'm gonna make it." And I just thought that's kind of cool, you know, somebody talking like, you know, to the world, you know, like I'm gonna make it. But you know what? That message actually sunk in one of my boats because I've sank a lot of boats, and so I lost that one.
Oh, yeah. That's too bad.
It was one of the cooler ones I found. But there's a lot of them like that, you know. It's a really neat one. So
you started collecting these messages, and of course, you know, opening them up, reading the messages. I can imagine a lot of people do this on kind of the spur of the moment, on a whim, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I put a message in a bottle? What's the range of things that people write on these messages?
The range would be anywhere from a treasure map, which I checked both treasure maps and there's no treasure there, but, you know, to literally spur of the moment. But, you know, there's a few that are pretty heavy. They were, you know, weren't meant to necessarily be found. And one, at spur of the moment, in my head, this is the scenario. Somebody was lost a lost loved one and really couldn't handle life without that lost loved one is kind of what it says in there. And what's kind of interesting about it is it's just like ripped paper from a brown paper bag, like a shopping bag. It's like they just ripped it and wrote this thing. And it's, I mean, not to be morbid, but I took it as like, because the end is like, but you've been gone for a year and all this, but I'll see you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I kind of took it like they might be ending their life or something. So some of them are pretty heavy, you know,
yeah.
And that's the range. Some of them are light, like, hey, if you find this, you know, call me or send me an email or whatever. And then, you know, you have your range of you know, people, you know, recovering from drugs and stuff and just, you know, it really, the range, that's what makes it so interesting. It's a wide range.
As you started collecting these, have you ever tracked down one of the people that sent these messages? Have you ever sent that email or made that phone call to say, hey, I found your message?
Yeah. Quite a few, you know, they're usually, some of them I forgot. Oh yeah, I remember doing that. Or, oh, I did that. Oh, I threw it off of this bar or something they've been drinking or something. I don't know. And then I think the most exciting person was a truck driver that threw this message off and he didn't remember doing it. I'm like, dude, I've got your name right here. And it says that you threw this off on this date. And if I had to think about it, I think you probably threw it off in that bridge in Burlington, Iowa. And I'm like, you ever go over the bridge? He's like, yeah, I do on my route once a month. Or so. He's like, wait, I do remember throwing that. He was so excited. He couldn't believe someone found it. And what was smart about that particular one, and a few people get it, but people will put rocks in the bottle because otherwise the wind, the current will then take it, you know? It'll, like, be a little bit less buoyant. And otherwise, the wind just, if you just throw an empty bottle out there, the wind will blow it to shore and it won't go that far. So he actually put rocks in there, put a message in there, and yeah, he was very excited. And so was I. I was like, hey, that's cool.
What made you think of actually putting the collection together and sharing it with the public? Because I imagine you have quite a few collections from all the cleanup you've done over the years. Why share this?
You know the guy Mike Rowe that did Dirtiest Job? Somebody's got to do it on CNN, Dirty Jobs guy. Okay, so he's a real big supporter, a good friend and all that. And you know, I'd see him once a year, twice a year. And he kept saying, what's up with the message in a bottle? Have you done anything with it? And I'd be like, no, I haven't. He's like, man, get it done. You know, like he's like, quit messing around. So he kind of like, I've been thinking about it, and I usually do, and I don't think too much, and, you know, just like, hey, I'm just move forward. But in this case, I just couldn't get around doing it until it kind of challenged me, you know? What's cool, too, is I got together with this girl in the Quad City area here, and she, like, carves. She's a wood carver. She carves earrings and all sorts of stuff out of wood, and I knew she would be great with her artistic skills and mindset and everything, and I also collect out of the river painted wood, you know, like, you know, something, anything painted off a picnic table or a house or, you know, sort of weathered away, and so I gave her all this painted wood and said, can you custom make all these boxes? And she took about 300 hours into these boxes, and they match each bottle, and just did a fantastic job. Her and her boyfriend did it, and somewhere in Iowa, they have a tiny house out on a farm somewhere. But anyway, pretty cool. But anyway, so yeah, I think that complements the bottles really well.
So that's part of the display. And the messages are part of the display as well?
Yeah. So what we did is we had my buddy Terry Walker took photos of all the messages themselves on glass plates. We'd pull them out, you know, very gently because they rip, you know, or they shred. They're just very fragile. Some of them have been sitting there 25, 30 years or more, you know. And so then we laid them on the glass and then photographed each one. And then And, you know, we blurred out the names because some of them are heavy, you know, and they weren't meant to be necessarily, you know, found, or, and we didn't want everybody, you know, calling these people and things like that. So we blurred out some of the names, but you can actually read, we blew up the messages and they're on podiums so that you can sit there and read what you're looking at in that bottle. And then we also have a huge map that we matched up with most of them. You can see where we found it if you look on the river system, because we found them, you know, out in New York. I just got back from New York City, did a big cleanup in the East River, and we find them all over the country, you know, not down in Mississippi.
Have you ever sent a message in a bottle?
No, but I remember my brother, like when I was like 9 years old or 10 years old, I remember coming back from a trip in Wisconsin and he tried to throw one in a glass bottle out of the van window, but it just broke on the bridge.
Oh.
And, I don't know. Yeah, I never have actually. But what was interesting is I did the Figgy told me about this International Museum Expo. And I wanted to get the word out about this message in a bottle collection, you know, and I also wanted to learn, like, what people think of it, you know. So I set up, it was in St. Louis, which is great because the barge is right there. So I stayed on the barge, went to this. But I can't tell you how many people came by and one were shocked that they actually exist. Like, they're real. Like, they just thought it was some mythical thing that people really don't do it. A lot of people were shocked about that. But the other thing is how many people basically said, yeah, I've actually thrown one in there, but I've never found one. But who would? Because they're not in places like normal people don't go to places like I go, where these trash-filled, you know, areas and backwaters and stuff. So, you know, kind of cool to be the guy that finds them, you
right.
know. And the volunteers have found some, and crew members, and so it's it's cool.
What do you want people to take away from this display, from seeing these messages in bottles that you've found?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's, like I said, some of them are light and some of them are kind of heavy. And I think each one has its own story. And, you know, there's always going to be sort of intrigue with it, I think. And so, you know, I don't know. I don't really know what people will take away. But I do think it's worth going. It's a really cool setup. And for the hometown to kick this off in the hometown is wonderful. But from here, it'll go that it's going to go to Kansas City, and then I have really strong interest in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, there, and it'll be on tour for probably ever, which is really cool, you know?
I'm talking to Chad Pogracki. He is the founder of Living Lands and Waters. He's been cleaning up waterways for 20 years now, and he has a collection of messages in bottles that he's found over the years. It's on display at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport through September. He'll be giving a collector's talk on Thursday, July 13th at 7 p.m. so people can learn more about the messages in a bottle then. But we are going to continue our conversation and talk more about his work in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Chad Pogracki. He is the founder of Living Lands and Waters. It's based in Moline, Illinois. He travels all over the place with his barge, cleaning up waterways. He's been doing this for 20 years now. And we've been talking about his collection of messages in bottles that he has pulled out of waterways all over the place. He's put together a collection that's on display right now at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport. He'll also be talking about the collection on July 13th at 7 p.m. And Chad, I'm curious, do you have other collections? What else do you collect?
Oh, I collect painted wood out of the river. I collect like boat bumpers, you know, because it's nautical, and I have like so many of them hanging at our headquarters, you know, like different colored boat bumpers and It's kind of nautical. And then I know it sounds weird, but like there's dhows. We find like hundreds of dhows, and they're like all crazy dreadlocked up, you know, by the time we find them with burrs, and they look creepy. And so I guess you would say I have a creepy dhow collection, and it's displayed on our fence, on our garbage barge, because there's a bunch of us, about 8 to 10 of us, that live on a barge, or 5 barges really, and we fill them full of garbage. So it looks like something like from the movie Mad Max, or from like Waterworld. It's kind of crazy, but yeah, just weird stuff you find. I don't know why we started dowels, just because they're so weird, I guess.
Sounds like you could have your own museum someday.
You know, you're probably right on that. You're probably right on that.
Well, a lot of us have been following your career back for 20 years, since you started cleaning up the Mississippi River in 1998, and then you founded this organization, Living Lands and Waters, and bought the barge. You've been traveling. You have a lot of people working with you and for you now. Can you give us an idea of how big the operation is today?
Well, it's certainly a lot bigger than it was 20 years ago. You know, it just started with a little John boat, essentially like a flat bottom boat, and just started, you know, picking up garbage right around the Quad Cities and the river. But my intention was always to make it as big as it can. And it really, the organization and the river cleanup specifically, the operation, has grown out of necessity. The bigger, the more equipment you have, the more people, the more financial help, the more you can get done. So now the operation is the only one like it in the world. We have 5 barges, and we have 2 towboats. John Deere just donated us an excavator with a 50-foot grapple for pulling out the cars and the sunken boats. We can do that a lot easier now, a lot quicker. We have cranes, and then we have 6 work boats. And then we have a fleet of trucks as well. And so, you know, we can do a lot. I mean, we're doing, you know, sometimes on the Ohio, we're doing 10 to 12,000 pounds a day with just our crew. And that's just tonnage, you know. But we do, like last year alone, we put on over 200 events. And I think it was 9 states. So 200 events like river cleanup operations. And then on one of the barges is our dormitory, living quarters, but it's also a classroom. There's 2 full-time teachers on staff. And one guy I met, with our main teacher, has been here 10 years. I met him. He was rapping at like 2 in the morning at a bar with a jazz band. And like, I found out he was an 8th grade teacher. And it's like, hey, if you ever want to change a pace, you should give us a call. And he did. And so, we have a lot of students out there, almost every day high school students are in our classroom in conjunction with our cleanup. So it's a unique organization, but we get a lot done. The stats are by the end of this year, we'll have removed over 10 million pounds of garbage out of America's rivers. And we also have, by the end of this year, we'll have worked with over 100,000 volunteers have come to our event, gotten our boats, and went out there and helped us remove a lot of garbage. And then what else? Oh, we have a nursery that we have in Davenport, Iowa, and we plant a lot of trees and give trees away. So we've given away or planted our 1 millionth tree. And then we've done over 1,000 community river cleanups since we started. So a lot of zeros on all those, and kind of cool to look back and say, hey, we've got a lot done, but there's a lot still to do. So, you know, I feel like I'm just getting started.
When you think about the waterways you've spent the most time on, and you know, let's talk about the Mississippi. Since you started working on the Mississippi 20 years ago, can you see a visible change? Can you see the impact of what you've done?
So here's what's so cool is, you know, change, everybody would love a lot of different things to change overnight, but they don't. And change is just like the barge I live on. You know, it's slow to start going. It's slow to start going, but then it starts to build momentum, and then it's hard to stop. So I don't have one specific story to tell you about where we've went, and we kept going back until the change was really made and then sustained. like the people are taking it on. People aren't dumping like they were into the river, that sort of deal. I have thousands of stories because thousands of these volunteers and these, you know, the towboat captains that we work with all the time, the commercial fishermen out there, the recreational boaters, so many people have come up and said, it is so much different than when you started. And it truly is. I mean, you can see we don't go back to a lot of these towns anymore because there just isn't enough stuff to justify us going back, which is exactly the best thing that could possibly happen. And so I'm certainly not personally taking credit for any of that. The 100,000 volunteers that we've worked with, that's really who deserves the credit. And then the crew of people I live with and work with every day, you know, it's really a team effort. And that's really what I named our barge, teamwork, because that's really what it's all about, you know.
Do you think that there has been a cultural change where people just are less likely to dump stuff in the water?
Yes, definitely. From I'm proud to say, from St. Louis to St. Paul and the Upper Mississippi River, it truly has changed. But here's how it's changed. Is people like yourself at NPR, whether it's radio, television, newspaper, whatever the form, like you guys have really kept it at the forefront of and helped this organization grow to what it is. So thank you. And I always do this. I always thank all journalists because they really do make a lot of movements happen. And so there's a lot of credit that goes to you and everybody in your profession, you know.
Well, let's talk about those students, though. I mean, you've had thousands of students come into your classroom and learn about this. And, of course, young people and their habits, I mean, that impacts the world in a huge way. What do you feel like those students take away from visiting the barge?
I mean, first they see the impacts, you know, of littering or garbage in the river. And we're not pulling out like pop cans. I mean, we pull out over 5,055-gallon barrels, and a lot of them have different substances in them. And, you know, I mean, over 1,000 refrigerators. I think it's 1,100 refrigerators removed and tens of thousands of tires and blah, blah, blah. So they see barge loads. Like, barge loads are impactful. That's part of the reason we use barges, because it makes a statement about our rivers without even having to say a word. But truthfully, when those kids come in the classroom, the two teachers on staff, they talk all about the river. But when I'm there, I only just usually greet them. I speak to them for about 10 minutes and just really tell them, like, hey, I'm an average person, saw a problem, and have been able to really, with the help of a lot of people, do something about it. And I'm just saying, if nothing else, you walk away from here today, just know that if you see a problem, no matter how young, you can really make a big difference. Because, you know, people want to see young people succeed. I tell them that and to find their passion and to volunteer for different organizations. And so that's really my message to them, a little bit bigger than the river, because I really wanted to speak to them and, like, you know, have them, you know, don't, I always say don't follow your dreams. That's just, you can't do that. You need to, if you really want something to happen, you need to lead it, and you need to lead your dreams. So that's my message pretty much to the students, you know. But everybody says they're the future, or they're the future, but, and they are, but I tell them, you are the future, but you're really the present, because I tried to get this going when I was 17 years old. So that's, I kind of like that. I like the ability to be able to talk to those students and tell them those sort of things, you know, because I think it's important.
You mentioned, I mean, the big stuff obviously is something that you worked so hard to pull out of these waterways. But the little stuff, I mean, you mentioned pop cans. I mean, we still see people just throwing trash out of their car windows. You see that along the roadways. You see that in waterways, too. Do you feel like that's changing at all?
I definitely do. Yeah. I mean, I think it still exists for sure, but you know, a lot of it is accidental, but yeah, some people just, they don't care and it's hard to change people, some of them. And I've had people back up right to the riverbank, didn't realize like what we did and just dump couches right over. That happened in across from Kentucky down there. But I mean, I'm not going to mess with the guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's got a pickup truck, and I guarantee he's got a shotgun. So, I mean, you know, I just do my work, and try to, you know, just set the pace like that and make the change that way. But I think in all regards, I think things have got a lot better when it comes to litter, for sure.
In Iowa, there's been talk of repealing our bottle bill so that there would no longer be a deposit on cans and bottles.
That would be the stupidest thing you could possibly do. That's what I think. That I tell you what, come over to Illinois, drive down the road, look at how much garbage is on the road, or any other state that doesn't have a bottle bill. Go to Iowa, and you will see a tremendous difference. And so, I mean, Michigan as well, you're not going to find a bottle. Plus, it gives all the homeless people, you know, jobs. I mean, they, you know, people make their money off of that. And I think the bottle bill is a great thing. And I have pictures of rivers that are in the backwater of the Mississippi. It's 2 foot deep with garbage. And it goes on like that for miles. It looks like snow. I thought it was snow on Google Earth. And that's a place that doesn't have a bottle bill. If they had a bottle bill, you wouldn't find anything like what I've seen.
Are there other policy changes that concern you right now? Things that are on the horizon possibly that you feel could impact water quality negatively?
There's a lot, yeah. With the, you know, everything going on with the EPA and administration and all that, like, yeah, a lot of things I think are going to impact negatively. But on the same tack, to be positive, like, I've worked side by side with 100,000 people that I know care as much as I do about our rivers. And so I have a lot of hope, but I have a lot of hard work left in me, you know. So I just, some things negative happen and I kind of decided I would just work harder to do the best I can and not let things kind of detract or get me down. You know what I'm saying?
You definitely have an optimistic outlook. There's been a lot of conversation and recently about concerns about infrastructure on the rivers. As you're traveling up and down, say, the Mississippi River, what do the locks and dams look like? Are you concerned about infrastructure problems?
That's been something that, I work with a lot of those barge companies, and they've given us rides and they've given us equipment and they, you know, they help us out financially. And a big thing for them has been infrastructure, and a big thing for all the people on the environmental side is, you know, more habitat. And so I'm hoping that they can both get what everybody wants, but infrastructure definitely, like, I've come up so many times, like, with the barges, and the lock is broke. I was just in a lock 2 weeks ago and down in St. Louis, and I was in it, and it broke. And I'm, like, looking at the gate wall, and it won't go down. And so I'm, like, what's taking so long? And the guy comes over because it looks like it broke. And he's, like, it broke. So, yeah, there's definitely issues out there. And I think waterways has gotten overlooked in a lot of ways in the past. So I think that people now are looking at it like it's an investment in the future. So hopefully everybody can come together and make it happen, you know?
Now, you've also expanded your range to include land. You're cleaning up land near the I-80 bridge on the Illinois side near East Moline. Yeah. There was a tornado that struck it. What made you take on that project?
Well, so I this is where our headquarters is, and it was, a tornado ripped through there and ripped down like 100 trees. So I went around and with all the arborists, I got with those guys and because they're usually, you know, professionally cutting trees down in people's yards and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, would you come for a day and help cut up this? And it was the start of our new I-80 restoration project, which I went to Illinois Department of IDOT and worked with them, and you know, they didn't, you know, budgets are tight in Illinois, so they were really happy for the help and been great partners. But basically, we're going to take we're cut all the dead trees. They're actually working on it now, but they're taking all the trees that got ripped down, and then we're going to replant like native prairie grasses there and shrubs and some, you know, oaks and make it visibly a much more appealing entrance into Illinois, because I figure, you come over the Interstate 80 bridge, the river's beautiful, but then there's all these trees down that look terrible, but it's your first impression of Illinois, or if you're leaving, it's your last impression. So we want to make both those impressions the best we can and have some, have it visibly appealing and also good for wildlife. So it'll be a win-win for everybody.
Now, you are on the road 10 months, or on the river, 10 yeah. months out of the year, at least. You're traveling all over the place. You're speaking, but you're also doing this work. You're pulling trash yeah. out of waterways, cleaning up.
Yeah.
What does the future look like? What are you hoping to accomplish in the next 10 years?
You know, I guess it's one of my faults. I don't always have a 10-year or 20-year plan, and my board can tell you that, and board of directors, you know. You know, I think it's just to keep doing the most you can in the time you have with the resources you have available. And, I mean, I'd love another 10 million pounds or more, you know. And, you know, we just did a cleanup Monday and the East River, a big cleanup. It was really, really well attended and great in New York. And then we did a Recycle Like a Rockstar event in St. Louis on Friday. And so a lot of jump around, a lot of traveling, but a lot of results. And really, I think the next 10 years, 20 years, that's what it boils down to, just a lot more results.
Well, Chad, thank you so much for talking with me today.
No. Hey, thank you for what you do and everybody at NPR. I listen to you guys all the time. And so take care. Thanks again.
Chad Pragracki is the founder of Living Lands and Waters, based in Moline, Illinois. His collection of messages in bottles is on display at the Figge Art Museum in Davenport. It will be on display through September. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Chad Pragracki's work cleaning up waterways has inspired a lot of people to get out there and make a difference. In fact, Project AWARE, a week-long waterway cleanup project in Iowa sponsored by the Department of Natural Resources, came about after the founder heard Pragracki speak. Project AWARE will be marking its 15th year when volunteers work to clean up the headwaters of the Cedar River from July 10th through the 14th. And Lynette Sigley is the Project AWARE coordinator. She is with us now. Hello, Lynette.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. Elizabeth Reitz is also here from the Office of the State Archaeologist. She'll be the resident archaeologist on the trip this year. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for being here. And Lynette, for people who aren't familiar with Project AWARE, give me the nuts and bolts. What is it?
Project AWARE, as you mentioned, is the Iowa Department of Natural Resources volunteer week-long river cleanup, and it started back in 2003, and as you mentioned, Chad Pragracki was really the inspiration for us starting the river cleanup. For most Iowans, their view of rivers in Iowa is as they cross over bridges, but what we really wanted to do was get Iowans in the seat of a canoe to really experience firsthand the rivers in Iowa, what are the issues, challenges, and opportunities that we're dealing with. So it's a river cleanup. This summer, when we are on the Cedar River, we're going to cover 55 miles. The mileage is going to vary. We've got 2 half-days, so it'll be about 4 to 5 miles. And then the full days will be about 15 to 17 miles. So we'll provide canoes for volunteers as they paddle down the river and come across trash. They'll load it into their canoes, and then we'll offload it, sort and recycle as much of the trash as we can. And then in the evenings, we'll be hosting educational programs that really highlight the history, the communities that we'll be going through, what makes those areas unique to the state of Iowa.
And you'll be camping out, right?
Yes, we'll be tent camping. We'll be doing one night at Otrano Park, one night at Interstate Park near Mitchell, and then 2 nights in Charles City.
And volunteers come aboard to do this. Give me an idea of the kinds of people who volunteer, because you have people of all ages that get involved, right?
Right. We have volunteers from all ages who participate in the event. It's a very family-oriented event. Last year, for example, I think the age of volunteers ranged from 4 up to 70, 75 or 78. About half of the volunteers have been on the event before, and the other half are new each year. So it's a good mix of people from all different backgrounds that participate. And we even have some of the people who live in that particular watershed and the communities that will come out and join us on the river as well.
How many volunteers can be involved?
What limits us will be the availability of canoes. Last year, we had 329 volunteers. Our record year was 2 years ago on the Wapsipinicon in eastern Iowa when we had 433 volunteers. And someone can volunteer for a day, a couple of days, or the entire week. So there's that flexibility. If they can't take an entire week of vacation, they can try to squeeze in a day on the river with us.
And how did you decide what waterway you'd focus on this year, the headwaters of the Cedar River up in Mitchell and Floyd counties?
We have a map that we're tracking all of the rivers that we've done in the past. And so we look at where there's a gap in the map and where there's interest locally in having the event come to that area. Plus, there's a lot of activity going on in the Upper Cedar River right now in terms of the Upper Cedar River Watershed Management Authority, where there are efforts to address water quality and water quantity issues. You've got Charles City that's had the dam modification project and has created the state's first whitewater park. So there's a lot of things that we're going to be able to highlight through the educational programming this year.
And about half of the volunteers come back every year. So clearly this is hard work, but it must be a lot of fun, too.
Yes, we try to make the event fun. I think what amazes me is that people will take their vacation and trade far away beautiful locations with sandy beaches for sand in Iowa rivers instead. And we're very fortunate to have a dedicated group of volunteers that join us each year.
Now, I'm talking with Chad Pogracki about some of the stuff he's pulled out of rivers, refrigerators, cars, that kind of thing. I mean, you're encountering some pretty large items. How does that work in a canoe?
The volunteers are pretty creative when it comes to large items, that if it does not fit in one canoe, they've been known to tie two canoes together and create a canoe moran and then load the item onto the canoes and then paddle it downriver. So the items that we find really vary in size from, you know, plastic bottles, pop cans that are in the river, up to hog feeders, dumpsters, large tires. We've pretty much seen anything and everything.
Wow. So now, Elizabeth, not every waterway cleanup has a resident archaeologist along for the ride.
Right.
What will you be doing as the resident archaeologist?
Well, we joined the trip last year along the Lower Des Moines River because, as Lynette said, it's all about what's really fantastic about the community. And there are some wonderful archaeological sites in that part of Iowa. So we gave my colleague Cherie joins me, and we gave at least three educational programs last year. And we just joined the canoe to help clean up. So we were on the trip cleaning up and pulling tires out of the river with everybody else. But we also answered questions along the way and talked about the landscape and how people might have been using those places on the river that we were seeing.
Historically.
So, historically, yes. So we'll be doing that again this year. We'll be along for the trip. We'll be cleaning up as much as we can, and we'll be answering everyone's questions.
So tell me about the prep work that you've done for this specific trip up north on the Cedar River. How do you prepare to give an educational program as you paddle down the river?
Well, I did some background research along the route. So I looked at our archaeological site records that we have on file for archaeologists to review. And I pretty much looked at archaeological sites that were within about 100 meters of the riverbank and just got an idea of where they were on the map. So, of course, I haven't been to that part of Iowa. I'm not sure what the landscape really looks like, but I've got an idea from topographic maps and LIDAR what I might see and where sites are located. And I also just documented the types of sites that had been previously recorded in that area.
So give me an idea. What kinds of sites?
The oldest site in that 55-mile stretch was from the early archaic period, which is over 8,000 years old, and that was dated from a spear point that was found, so that's diagnostic. And also some of the dams, the historic dams, are recorded as archaeological sites because anything older than 50 years ago is fair game for the National Historic Preservation Act.
Now, a lot of archaeology occurs in developed areas because when people build stuff, you've got to dig stuff out. You're going to be in a pretty rural part of the state. Does that make archaeological sites a little more rare?
It does. It really limits what we actually know about the area. Of course, archaeologists work in conjunction with development for compliance reasons. And if there hasn't been a lot of development, we don't know a lot about the archaeological past of that area. So we do really rely on local landowners and property owners because Iowa has a lot of private property and people are definitely out there looking for artifacts and collecting artifacts. So we really try to work with those collectors and landowners to find out what they've found and documented because they really help us build a bigger picture of what was happening.
I think anybody who grew up in Iowa or spent a long time in Iowa has heard stories of finding arrowheads out in farm fields, things like that. And it's pretty easy to just take that stuff home and keep that. But, I mean, what do you want a landowner or somebody who encounters an artifact like that to do?
We would love it if somebody found an artifact, if they could photograph it. Or take a really good photograph of it, and most people have smartphones nowadays to take a GPS point or figure out where they are and plot it on a map so they can communicate with us and we can create an archaeological site record for that find. We absolutely do not share that information. I know a lot of people are worried that we're going to tell others where they're finding artifacts, and that absolutely would never happen. But it's really the location that gives us the most dynamic and rich information about that find. It's not the object itself, but it's the context.
So it's not that you're going to swoop in and take away
No, absolutely not. Nope.
All right. So last year, since you were on Project Aware last year and were giving archaeological talks, but also digging trash out of the river,
Right. What
did you learn from the experience?
I was pretty amazed by the amount of stuff that we found and that we pulled out. I mean, it literally is everything and the kitchen sink. I think there were probably three or four kitchen sinks that were found on the trip. And a lot of it is historical. You know, some things are definitely over 100 years old. It's trash in the river. It's where people dump their trash. But there's an astonishing amount of recent garbage, too. And I just think we have no excuse for that in this day and age.
So what was the biggest thing you saw pulled out of the river?
There were some crazy big sections of culverts and pipes. There was a dumpster, just, you know, the kind of dumpster you'd see behind the grocery store. There were several fridges and lots of clawfoot bathtubs.
Clawfoot bathtubs.
Yes.
Lynette, tell me some of how many years have you been involved with Project Aware?
I have actually been involved in all 15
okay.
years. Yes.
So give me some highlights of things you've found or seen found in the rivers you've worked on.
I think the number of tires that we've pulled out over the years has amazed me. We've pulled out over 5,000 tires, all different sizes. One that was so large on the Iowa River in 2012, we were dealing with low water that the volunteers had to walk it downriver because they couldn't really float in the canoe with it. It was that large of a tire. I mean, I think all of the appliances, there was a manure spreader that got pulled out one year. I think every year we're surprised by what comes off the river. And being a staff person and being land-based, it's always interesting to watch those canoes come down river just to see what kind of items the volunteers have found along that stretch of river that day.
Now, I can imagine a lot of the things that are found in the river, we've had such significant floods over the years that it's not just people throwing trash into waterways. A lot of this stuff must have been, you know, washed away during floods as well.
Yes, and in fact, in 2008, in the event's 15-year history, that was the only year we had to postpone the event because we had the floods in June. Project Aware was scheduled for June that year, and there was just no way we could do the event. We were up on the from Mason City down to Cedar Falls on the Winnebago, Shell Rock, and Cedar Rivers. And so we came back in August, and I think one volunteer really summed it up well, where previous years the trash that we were pulling out was discarded carelessly into the river, whereas in 2008, a lot of what we were pulling out was just personal items that people had lost in the flood of 2008. So it was a very, very stark contrast of what they were seeing in 2008.
Well, and Elizabeth, as you were talking about some of the trash that you saw pulled out of the river, I can imagine it's been there a really long time. Did you get a sense for, are these recent dumps or have they been there a long time?
They're really all across the board. There were some pretty recent disposals, I think, especially people are recreating on private property, maybe adjacent to some of the rivers that we're on. But also, there's definitely some history to some of the trash. Really old cars, you can tell that they're maybe from the 40s and 50s. And lots of historic trash, like ceramic dishes that we don't really use or see anymore, old glass bottles. Of course, that stuff, we're picking it up as trash and we're cleaning it up out of the river. But some of it potentially could be considered archaeological sites, I'm sure.
Interesting. Well, Lynette, do you feel, in your experience over the last 15 years, do you feel like there has been a change? Do you think people are maybe discarding trash into waterways less than they used to?
I would say they're discarding less trash into the rivers. I think our hope with AWARE is, as we cover different rivers in Iowa and remove a lot of that trash, that the river is going to be clean and will remain clean for future Iowans to recreate and enjoy.
The Upper Cedar River is a part of the Cedar River you haven't worked on before, although you have spent time in previous years on other parts of the Cedar River. And I know there's been a lot of work done to map and understand the Cedar River watershed. With the Department of Natural Resources, in addition to the awareness of pollution and the cleanliness of our waterways, are you also trying to teach people about this watershed?
Yes, and that we'll be doing through the educational programs. In addition to Elizabeth and Cherie being along talking about the archaeology, Ryan Clark with the Iowa Geological Survey and Kata McCarville with Upper Iowa University will be along all week, and we'll be covering the geology. It's sort of a unique geology, bedrock exposures along the way. We'll also be talking about water quality and quantity issues. We'll be doing some water testing as the volunteers are paddling downriver. Volunteers will be exposed to some of the local history in terms of Hamlin Garland was a resident in Mitchell County for a number of years, and Kurt Meyer is going to do a program talking about his time in Iowa. We're trying to promote and expose people to what's being done locally in terms of watershed improvement, putting in wetlands in the area, and other things that relate to this particular watershed.
We've all heard in the news recently that the DNR has had some significant cuts, budget cuts. What does the future look like for Project AWARE?
Well, we hope it continues into the future. The DNR has sponsored the event for 15 years now. And in addition, we really rely on a lot of sponsors. In fact, we've got about 85 to 90 sponsors helping to make the event possible this year through monetary and in-kind donations, whether it's the rental of canoes for our volunteers to use, camping where we can stay, recycling of the trash, cut-resistant gloves for the volunteers to wear. So there's a lot of outside support that's coming to help this event as well.
And if people want to get involved, is there still an opportunity for volunteers this year?
Yes. The deadline is quickly approaching. The deadline to register is this Friday, June 16th. And again, you can come for a day, a couple of days, or the entire event. The only cost to register is if you want meals. We'll have a caterer provide meals in the campgrounds where we'll be.
All right. Well, Lynette Sigley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lynette Sigley is the Project AWARE coordinator with the Department of Natural Resources. Elizabeth Reitz, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Elizabeth Reitz of the Office of the State Archaeologist. She'll be the resident archaeologist on Project AWARE this year. It will take place in the headwaters of the Cedar River from July 10th through the 14th. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.